Chapter 7. Airplanes in the Night. As John and Kismin sat arguing about whether or not he had said that she had kissed a corpse, their voices had gotten loud without them realizing it. But suddenly they both fell silent. Someone was coming along the path in their direction, and a moment later, Braddock Washington appeared through the rose bushes.
"Who kissed a corpse?" he asked roughly.
"Nobody," answered Kismin quickly. "We were just joking."
"What are you two doing here?" he asked loudly. "Kismin, you ought to be reading or playing golf with your sister. Go read. Go play golf. Don't let me find you here when I come back."
Then he bowed at John and went up the path.
"See," said Kismin crossly when he had gone away. "You've spoiled it all. We can never meet anymore. He won't let me meet you. He'd have you killed if he thought we were in love."
"We're not anymore," cried John. "So he doesn't have to worry about that. Also, do you think that I'm going to stay around here? 6 hours from now, I'll be over those mountains and on my way back east."
Kismin came close and put her arm through his.
"I'm going to leave too."
"You must be crazy."
"Of course I'm going,"
she interrupted impatiently.
"You are certainly not. You..."
"Fine," she said quietly. "I'll tell Father."
Defeated, John forced a weak smile. "Okay, darling," he agreed, with pale and unconvincing affection. "We'll go together." Suddenly, his love for her returned to his heart. She was his, and she would go with him to share his dangers. He put his arms around her and kissed her with passion. After all, she loved him, and she had saved him. Discussing their plans, they walked slowly back toward the castle. They decided that since Braddock Washington had seen them together, they should depart the next night. John's lips were dry at dinner, and he accidentally breathed in a large spoonful of soup into his lungs because he was so nervous. He had to be carried into the card room and beaten on the back by one of the slaves, which Percy thought was very funny. Long after midnight, John's body gave a nervous jerk, and he sat suddenly upright, staring into the dark. Through his open windows, he had heard a faint sound over the whispers of the wind, but his mind was still clouded by dreams. But the sharp noise that came next was nearer, just outside the room. The sound of a turned doorknob, a foot touching the floor, a whisper. He could not make out the sounds well. He felt like he had a hard lump in the bottom of his stomach, and his whole body ached as he strained to hear. Then, in the blackness, he saw a vague shadow standing by the door, a shadow that he could only faintly see, that was mixed into the dark and the curtains, like a reflection in a dirty glass window. With a sudden movement of fright, John pressed the button beside his bed to escape, and the next moment, he was sitting in the bath of the next room, now fully woken up by the shock of the cold water. He jumped out and ran for the door, which he knew led out onto the landing of the second floor. The door opened without a noise. A single lamp burning far above on the ceiling lit the massive and beautiful carved ivory stairway. For a moment, John hesitated, stopped by the silent and massive beauty of the house, which seemed to swallow him up like a huge blanket as he stood there lonely, wet, shivering, and small. Then suddenly, two things happened at the same time. The door of his own sitting room swung open, and three naked servants ran into the hall. As John hid in his corner in wild terror, another door slid back in the wall on the other side of the hallway, and he saw Braddock Washington standing in the lighted elevator, wearing a fur coat and a pair of riding boots over his rose-colored pajamas. John had never seen any of the three servants before, and it flashed through his mind that they must be the executioners. They paused in their movement toward John and turned toward the men in the elevator, who yelled,
"Get in here, all three of you, quick as hell!"
Then, in an instant, the three servants darted into the cage, the light disappeared as the elevator door slid shut, and John was again alone in the hall. He fell down weakly against a stair. It was clear that something important had occurred, and it had saved his life. What was it?
Had the slaves started a revolution? Had the prisoners escaped? Or had the men of Fish accidentally wandered through the hills and into the valley? John did not know. He heard a faint sound of air as the elevator went up again. Then, a moment later, it descended. It was probably Percy going to help his father. It occurred to John that this was his opportunity to join Kismine and plan an immediate escape. He waited until the elevator had been silent for several minutes, shivering a little in the cool night air, and then returned to his room to throw on some clothes. Then he climbed a long flight of stairs and turned down the hallway carpeted with furs which led to Kismine's rooms. The door of her living room was open and the lamps were lit. Kismine stood near the window, and as John entered, she turned toward him.
"Oh, it's you," she whispered. "Did you hear them?"
"I heard your father's slaves in my..."
"No,"
she interrupted excitedly.
"Airplanes."
"Airplanes? Maybe that was the sound that woke me."
"There are at least a dozen. I saw one a few moments ago against the moon. The guard back by the cliff fired his rifle, and that's what woke Father. We're going to fire our guns on them right away."
"Are they here on purpose?"
"Yes, it's that Italian who got away."
Suddenly, there was a sharp crack outside, and the whole castle went dark. Someone had knocked out the power.
"Come on," she cried to him. "We'll go up to the roof and watch it from there."
She took his hand, and they felt their way out the door in the dark. When they got to the roof, John put his arms around her and kissed her mouth. Above, under the moon, sliding in and out of the clouds below it, the shapes of a dozen airplanes circled. From the valley, flashes of fire leaped toward them as the guns did their job. Kismine clapped her hands with pleasure, but a moment later, she went quiet as the airplanes began to drop bombs in a storm of light and sound. The attackers in the airplane focused on the places where the guns were, and almost immediately they destroyed one. "Kismine," said John, "you'll be glad when I tell you that this attack came on the night of my murder. If I hadn't heard that guard shoot off his gun back by the pass, I would be dead."
"I can't hear you,"
cried Kismine, not paying attention to him.
"You'll have to talk louder."
"I said," shouted John, "that we'd better get out before they start bombing the castle." Suddenly, the slave's residence was hit by a bomb, sending huge, sharp pieces of stone flying.
"Oh, no! That's $50,000 worth of slaves," shouted Kismine. "Don't they have any respect for our property?"
John again tried to get her to leave. The airplanes were hitting more and more targets, and only two of the guns were still shooting. It was obvious that they could not hold out much longer. "Come on," cried John, pulling Kismine's arms. "We've got to go. Do you realize that those people will kill you if they find you?"
"We'll have to wake Jasmine up," she said as they hurried toward the elevator. Then she added with childish delight, "We'll be poor, won't we? Like people in books. And I'll be an orphan, totally free. Free and poor. What fun!"
She stopped and raised her lips to him in a delighted kiss. "It's impossible to be both free and poor," said John unhappily. "And if I had to choose, I would choose to be free, not poor. So you'd better dump your jewel box into your pockets." 10 minutes later, the two girls met John in the dark hallway, and they went down to the main floor of the castle. They stood for a moment out on the terrace, watching the burning servant's house and the two planes in flames on the lawn on the other side of the lake. Only one gun was firing, but the attackers were closing in. John and the two sisters ran down the steps and began to climb a narrow path that wound up the Diamond Mountain. Kismine knew a spot halfway up where they could lie hidden but still be able to observe the valley. Later, they could escape along a secret path through the mountains.